Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today for my very first transmission from my new location in space-time. I have now moved into my new place. Had a little bit of a worry for a few days there where the internet was not working and was a little bit isolated and disconnected and wasn't sure I was going to be able to get this podcast out for you today, but everything is fixed. Internet is up and working. It's running fine. So here we are with a brand new podcast. You might notice there's maybe a little bit different sound, a little different ambiance as I'm in a very different room than I was in for the past year. So there's that, but it's probably not that big of a difference on your end. Sounds a little echoey here for me on the headphones, but we'll see if that translates onto the broadcast of the podcast or not. Today, I'm joined by Ben Holt. We actually did this interview a few weeks ago in anticipation of the move and not having time to do interviews and things like that. So it's a couple weeks old at this point, but it's still, of course, all very relevant. Ben is a toad facilitator. He also does breath work. He does all kinds of stuff, runs retreats. And so we talk about all of that, and we talk about music, we talk about film and photography and creativity. It is a great conversation. I'm looking forward to bringing that to you all today. I don't know what's coming up next on the podcast, other than, of course, next week will be another chapter from Being Infinite. But my next interviews that I have lined up are still a few weeks out, so I don't know what I'm going to bring you the week after next. Now that I'm back online, got to start sending out some inquiries about getting some interviews. So I don't know who my next guest is going to be, but, you know, it'll be someone. I don't have anybody to thank this week for making a contribution in support of the podcast. If you would like to support this podcast, it's quite easy. Just go by my webpage, www.martinball.net, and use the PayPal link at the top right of the page. Or you can also join up over at Patreon, which is available through my webpage, or at patreon.com/martinwball and become a monthly contributor at the level of your choice. Also, this past week, I was not able to do any consults, but I am now back in business for doing consults, so you're welcome to reach out to me if you'd like to set up a consultation of 30, 60, or 90 minutes, www.nondualentheogenicintegration.com. Of course, is the website for that. And other than that, I don't think I have much to say at the moment, so let's go ahead and get into this interview with Ben Holt. His website is connectandevolve.com if you want to get in touch with Ben. And here's our conversation. Hope you enjoy, and we'll see who I can wrangle up to bring on the podcast in 2 weeks from now. All right? Hope you're well, wherever you are, here in Ashland. It's 111 degrees today. We are having a serious heat wave in the Pacific Northwest, along with much of the West. So I hope it's a little cooler wherever you are. And if it's hot, I hope you're doing your best to stay cool and avoid sunstroke and use your sunblock. Take care of yourself. All right, here's our conversation. Enjoy. How's it going, Ben?
Oh, so good. I'm currently in Sedona. I'm at a friend's house where there's Wi-Fi. Actually provides a nice little backdrop here in an Adobe home.
Nice.
Doing super well. We have our retreat coming up on the 24th of June. And yeah, just living the desert life for the next month.
Wow. Nice. Well, I'd love to hear about the retreat. I'm just looking at my calendar here. Just so you know, this interview will come out after that time. But just looking at your website, yeah, it seems like you have one coming up in September.
Yes, correct.
Okay, good. So you can still plug your retreat. Yeah, so
thank you.
So you're in Sedona now. Where do you usually house yourself? Or maybe there isn't a usual place. Maybe you're an all over the kind of guy.
Yeah, these days I'm for the past like 3 years I've been all over the kind of guy, all over the place. And I just kind of touched base back in the United States whenever everybody kind of got evicted from whatever foreign country they were in around March of 2020. I was in Bali at the time, and I did this kind of year-long pilgrimage in Asia. including India and Thailand and Bali, and got back. And since then, we've been just kind of running and gunning, doing the retreats. Me and Joel, we started in June of 2020, doing retreats together. And we did it at Grace Grove, this beautiful center in Sedona. And since then, Joel's back in Mexico, and myself and my team have been leading retreats there since then, there and in Mexico as well, and a couple other places internationally.
Cool. How'd you meet Joel?
Joel and I actually met at WeBac in 2019.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty funny. And I remember him talking to someone. It might have been you, Martin, talking to someone about doing retreats and wanting to put together some retreats after he left LA. And he reached out to me, and it was funny because I was in Bali thinking, and we'll go into this whole story, thinking, man, it'd be so cool to do a retreat in this summer. That'd be amazing if I get to come back to the United States and do a retreat this summer. And lo and behold, there's Joel reaches out to me and says, hey, man, why don't you come and we'll do a retreat together in Mexico in June.
Nice.
And so, yeah, so it was a very serendipitous, beautiful gift that he gave me, and we just kind of been running with it since then.
Cool.
Well, yeah.
We'll talk more about all your retreats and all of that. Just so you know, I've already hit record, you know, just,
awesome.
You know, like to just kind of jump right in, but,
sweet.
Yeah. I've been looking forward to getting a chance to talk to you and have you here on the podcast. You send a message and, hey, you want to get on the phone first? And it's like, no, I just like to get to know people, like, actually on the podcast. But, you know, I've got your website here. And so, you know, I've dug around a little bit and I've found out a few things about you. But, so, you know, you're mostly a brand new face to me. So I'm excited just to learn more about you and what you're all about and what you're offering. And it seems like you've got a nice, diverse collection of offerings available on your website. Mm-hmm. But let's kind of just start with your own personal story. Obviously you are in the space of doing medicine work, and you know, for my longtime listeners of the podcast, they probably know that Joel, we're speaking of Joel Briere, who I had on quite a few years ago now, maybe 3 years ago already. Gosh, time flies. And talked about his work with Toad and 5-MeO and Advaita Vedanta philosophy and all of that stuff. So we can see you kind of fit in there somewhere. But yeah, let's hear about you and kind of your journey into medicine work and also breath work. And your website also mentions, hypnosis, I believe, and NLP. So you got a lot going on. So yeah, where do you come from? What is the story of Ben Holt? What's his deal?
Yeah, well, gosh, how far back do I go?
In the beginning, so there was Ben.
In the beginning, I was born, birthed in a small town in Louisiana, which is quite ironic because it is a very, considering where, what I've been blessed enough to experience in life and the places I've been able to go, it is quite a debilitating place. It's very small. It is, the energy is very dense. And I grew up there, you know, until I was 23 years old. I lived in Louisiana, and I didn't know anything about the outside world. I didn't know what was beyond the confines of where I was. I thought that, you know, and this is this way in a lot of places, but I thought that going out and drinking, getting wasted on the weekends was the epitome of my existence. This was as good as it got. And that's what we worked our asses off all week for at the shitty jobs that we didn't like. And I was blessed. I got hooked up with this company that was a startup. It was similar to Grubhub, but it was for tier two cities. It was for smaller cities. And they were small at the time. And I was the fourth salesperson, the fourth business development manager on their team. Anyway, a year later, went from $20 million in revenue to $300 million in revenue, absolutely exploded. I helped them launch like 40 cities. I was young, I was eager, I was hungry, I was ruthless. And I finally had the opportunity to make money after college. And I went for it. And I made all this money. And I realized that once I made all the money, you know, over $100,000, the goal that everyone around me was trying to hit, and just couldn't, once I did it, I wasn't happy. I still wasn't happy. Mm-hmm. And so from there, I was blessed enough to go up to the mountains in Chattanooga. I went up there and lived pretty immersed in nature, which was a really beautiful experience and something that really changed my life, because I was coming from New Orleans, which is a concrete jungle of depression and anxiety and several hundred years of oppression. Mm-hmm. So the energy there is quite dense. And when I was in the mountains, I kind of found this piece of myself that loved nature and didn't even know it. And just, I was able to experience tons of nature there. And from there, still not satisfied with life after the money, after the nature, still wasn't satisfied with life. So I set intentions to be able to travel the world. I wanted to see the world. I wanted to go beyond the confines of the United States now that I had broken past the confines of Louisiana. And so I set intentions for an ability to make money while traveling. And that opportunity fell into my lap with writing articles for a media company. And I had done entrepreneurial things before. And so I quickly let this media company know that I could write for all their websites. I immediately hired writers. And next thing I know, I was making just as much money traveling the world as I was whenever I was working my ass off doing something I just couldn't stand doing. 40 hours a week, 40 to 80 hours a week, quite long weeks.
So, and I remember what kind of writing was this, like travelogue writing or destination writing, or
it was the most interesting thing. It was this media company that used articles with keywords and packed full of SEO and affiliate links, et cetera, to draw audiences to the websites and then make money on affiliate links. But the thing was, this media company had all these different websites. So it could have been about nursing homes. It could have been about RVs. We wrote about cat food. We wrote about basketball. Like, we wrote about everything. And it was so strange, but it was amazing, because we, you know, I made 5 cents a word. I was able to pay my employees a penny and a half. With them being in India and Nigeria, that was even more than 5 cents a word. Whenever you that I was making, whenever you did the currency exchange and what it looked like, so we were all doing well, but I only had to work about a couple hours a week and was making a great money.
Wow, that's pretty sweet.
It was sweet. It was a sweet. It was my intention was so satisfied, like it was perfect. And I remember being in Costa Rica. I had gone out to Costa Rica with my girlfriend. I did ayahuasca, you know, it's something I had wanted to do for a long time. And I was sitting on the beach, and my beautiful girlfriend brought me this beautiful plate of food and money in the bank. I was traveling at freedom, and I realized that I still wasn't happy.
Uh-oh.
I still wasn't satisfied with life. And I was like, man, oh man, what is it going to take for me to be happy? What is it going to take for me to be content, you know, and feel fulfilled? And next thing I know, I was in Colombia, and I was going there to be creative and see if the creativity and my creative expression would bring me fulfillment. And I went out there with a camera and a drone, and I was gonna make films. 3 months later, I had built this small business of this small media business. Me and my employees were making films. We were having fun. We were earning pesos, but it was fun. It was almost like I was playing with Monopoly money and playing in a different world, if you will. And I remember I had to come back to the United States for my good friend's wedding, and I planned on going back to Colombia to be this penthouse baller, right? This expat that lived up in the penthouse, had the big pool, had all the Colombian girlfriends. I was going to live the Colombian expat dream. And I remember coming back to the United States, going to the wedding, okay, finished with the wedding, and staying at my buddy's house for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. And the next thing I knew, I was there for 2 weeks. And I'm like, man, why do I have this feeling that I need to stay here? What is here for me? You know, nothing's ever been here for me. So why do I feel called to be here right now? And then he introduced me to the idea to go up to New York City to sit with Bufo Alvarez. And so I said, you know what? I don't have anything going on this weekend. Why not?
Nice and casual, like.
Yeah, nice and casual. I'll go up there on the weekend. So I go up there. I fly up on a Thursday, I believe, and I had this new camera, so I was going to film New York. First time in New York City. I filmed all over Manhattan. I had stayed in multiple different hostels, and by the time that Sunday came, the medicine day, the day I was going to do the medicine, I was completely New Yorked. Like, you know, somebody'd honk at me, I'd be like, hey, fuck you too, you know? I was totally Manhattan's, moving from one hostel bunk to another, $50 a night, you know, the cheapest thing I could find. It was like, man, this is hardcore. So I remember getting a quick meditation in the cab on the way to Upper East Side, and I remember knocking on that door of that apartment, and, you know, this big, generous, sweet, loving guy looked like my big brother. You might know who this is. I'll keep his identity under wraps for now. But going in, being warmly welcomed, feeling like, yeah, I've drank ayahuasca. I've smoked NMDMT. I've had these experiences. Like, I can't wait. Like, I'm excited for this. This is going to be great. And they kind of look at me like, huh, okay, cool deal. Yeah. And yeah, I had the experience. And to my knowledge, what I experienced at the time, what I thought was, okay, you know, I had the full experience, full release. And what I thought the takeaway was that my consciousness could go that far and come back into the body. Anything is possible. That's what I thought the memo was. Anything is possible. Hmm. The experience was cool, interesting, absolutely unbelievable. And I'm sure it expanded my consciousness quite a bit. We'll see. So I say my goodbyes the next morning. I actually stayed the night there. I go to Austin, Texas. My buddy invites me down to his lake house. We're playing music and just chilling on the lake, chilling, relaxing on the dock. It was wonderful. And I'm sitting in meditation, just relaxing. I had my feet dipped in the water, and I'll never forget this moment. I had a bandana over my eyes, and I was in meditation and just relaxing, and I felt this surge go through my body. And just for people that are like, oh, reactivation, I assure you this was not a reactivation, because many people have said that before. And I felt the surge go through my body, and I pulled the blindfold up, and everything I saw was geometry. I had this super sensory experience in the moment. And I thought it was only going to last a moment, but then it lasted 1 hour and 2 hours and 3 hours and 4 hours, where I was able to hear super things like they were right next to me, but then I knew they were far away. I had this incredible, almost 360 degree vision. And I had this unbelievable ecstasy in my entire body, this unreal stillness. And I was fully immersed in it while fully observing myself, experiencing it. And through this experience, I was connecting with higher deities, you know, Yeshua, Krishna, Buddha, and their consciousness. And I was having this experience with, and had never been told that this existed, you know, this experience of samadhi, this experience of nirvana, you know, something that the mystics, they search for many years as they meditate in these caves and around the Himalayas and all over East Asia and Asia. And but in the moment, I knew exactly what was happening. And in that moment, I deeply connected to Jesus and Yeshua, because I grew up in an extraordinarily toxic place that really propagandized Jesus in a very gnarly way.
Yeah.
And you know, I had moved so far away from that, and then it came full circle in that moment. And I was like, brother, you're so misunderstood. And he said, yeah, well, now welcome to the club. Now you know. And you know, felt this overwhelming compassion and love, of course. And this lasted for a month straight. And I realized that it could have lasted longer if I would have brought myself into solitude, but that wasn't my purpose. That wasn't my mission. And everything from a bottle of water to a pencil was the most beautiful and divine and perfect creation I ever experienced or witnessed. And I was completely egoless in this space. And, you know, it's funny, people's egos get triggered as soon as I say I was egoless in this space, including mine.
How dare you say that? How could you possibly
say that? How dare you say that? That is such an egoic thing to say. Yeah. And call it what you will, but I remember, you know, never in any other part of my life as a teacher now and as a facilitator, I've never come to a place where I did not want to be anything. I simply was. And that was the most satisfying and unbelievably gratifying experience I could possibly imagine, unfathomable to me in this place of consciousness that I'm in right now, so, which has been through a lot of work.
Yeah. So it sounds like you want to distinguish this from a reactivation, because from what you're describing, it sounds like this was a even more profound and impactful and longer lasting experience than your Bhopal Various experience, which that was just kind of, that's cool, anything's possible. But this was really a sustained and I would say it sounds like it has more content to it also than your Bhopal Various experience, that it gave you a lot to work with and to contemplate and really changed your experience at that point.
Yes, exactly. And it was the defining moment in my life where everything shifted for me and something told me, and you know, given I had a reactivation the first night that I slept, I was given a big dose. I mean, this was back in the Wild West days, which is, you know, for you, like, you're like, shit, the Wild West days. Let me tell you about the Wild West days, which I'm super eager to connect with you on. But this was back before integration was really a thing outside of some small secret societies, you know, and I had a reactivation that night. It was amazing. The reactivation was beautiful, but no, this moment changed my life forever. And I instantly knew that something really profound was happening to me. Whenever I researched it, I realized that I went into a state of samadhi, and that many people have done it before. People do it all the time through meditation. A lot of Kundalini practitioners experience this. Kundalini awakening, call it what you will. But your level of consciousness is extraordinarily high, and it was stimulated by that experience through Bhopal Various. And I talked to the gentleman that served me, and I said, holy shit, dude, you will never believe this. This thing is happening to me. I'm feeling energy. The spirit's telling me how to use turkey feathers and how to move energy. Like, what's happening right now? I need more. I need something to sink my teeth into. And he said, all right, well, I'm going to recommend a couple of different things. He said, I'm going to recommend you look into Bernard Gunther's work and read Entheogenic Evolution. Check out Martin Ball and Bernard Gunther. And I did. And your book, dude, is something that absolutely revolutionized my life. It brought so much light to my experience. And just so you know, that light that was brought to my experience has been quite a large ripple for hundreds of other people. And so thank you for your contribution to that movement, bro. Big.
You're welcome. That's nice to hear. I'm glad glad it had a good impact on you. Yeah.
A very good impact. I really attribute that book, and I was like, damn, I'm doing a podcast with Martin. I ought to reread the book. And then you were like, hey, we'll just flow with it. And I was like, you know what? Whatever.
Yeah, cool.
I'll reread the book. So save me some time. So thank you for that. But since then, something I realized after that, I went and traveled through Mexico with let me back up a little bit. After I had that experience, the gentleman that facilitated to me said, you're going to come be my little toad apprentice, aren't you? His exact words. And I was like, I guess so, man. You know, I don't know how you knew that that was even a thought of mine. You knew that that was in the flow of things, but I suppose so. So I go back to New York and sat with quite a few people. He was seeing about 8 to 12 people a day, serving them this medicine.
Wow.
Excuse me. And kind of like in a clinical setting. Mm-hmm. He was a psychiatrist. And so I saw, you know, I saw the unbelievable healing potential behind it. I saw it with my own eyes. I experienced it, then I saw it, and I knew that this was what was fulfilling me. I felt the fulfillment for the first time in my life to witness the healing of others coming from such a unbelievably stagnant and backwards place that just is so confused, to see truth and to experience truth experientially. It finally brought me fulfillment. And so after apprenticing, we traveled through Mexico and some of South America serving the medicine. And I quickly realized that there was a large missing link in the facilitation of Bufalvarius and 5-MeO-DMT and every other medicine, with being that being said. And that was preparation, integration, and not only integration of the experience, but integration of other modalities and healing tools into the flow of someone's transformation or awakening.
Okay, I want to talk. I want to talk about all that. So let's just hold on to that for a second. But there's just an element of your story there that I really want to emphasize that I think is really significant and really important. That, you know, I've used describing your own life and your pursuits and your success and kind of following your own desires and being able to go where you want and make money and not feeling fulfilled and, you know, having ayahuasca and Costa Rica and having a beautiful woman and still not feeling fulfilled. And then even going through this really profound awakening experience yourself. But what you have just described here, what really landed it all into a sense of fulfillment, and this is what I think is very important. And what just reminds me of my own sessions of working with people with 5-MeO is the incredible beauty of being present while other people are opening into the fullness of themselves. And to know that you are assisting and helping with that is so fulfilling. And then it just, because it's not just about me anymore. It's not just about my experience and what's happening to me. It's a, how do I help other people also have this? And it becomes that, that giving back and that it's, you know, it's not even just selfless in the sense of, you know, oh, I'm not thinking about myself anymore, because you still are thinking about yourself, but you're being fulfilled through the assistance of others. And so I just really wanted to highlight that, that that was a linchpin for you in your own experience of self-worth and self-fulfillment, is that service towards others. And that's, and it's so beautiful. That's, I mean, that's one of the things that I love about 5-MeO, is it's so beautiful when people really let go and really open up and really transform and heal. It's just, you can't compare it to anything else. So I just wanted to highlight that because I like that part of your story. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so funny because exactly what you're saying, you know, I had achieved not only material wealth, but then freedom and then the woman and then the ability to do whatever I wanted, basically whenever I wanted to. And I was never fulfilled. And what eventually brought me fulfillment was humble service.
Yeah.
Was being humbly in service. And I would have never guessed that, you know, back then. I would have never assumed that that would be the case. And it's so funny that it was. And at the beginning, you know, I didn't charge for anything. I so much so desired, like you said, to be in assistance and to hold a space for others to experience their own healing and experience themselves in the most powerful way. It brought me so much fulfillment and still does to this day. You know, obviously it's different. And really where the big difference came in and what really changed everything is when I saw the missing link of the prep and the integration.
Yeah.
And so I told my mentor, I was like, well, look, man, you know, I'll do everything I can to take experiences that I had from my integration process and put them into a document. And so I made a document, and next thing I know, that document was being used everywhere with my mentor, my mentor's mentor, and they were serving. I mean, golly, talk about the Great Awakening. It was like this unbelievable, just mass flux of Bufalvarius just throughout the United States and around the world. And it was being used and I'm like, oh Jesus. Okay. let me make sure there's no typos and really go back in and do this thing. And, I was like, how crazy is it that this thing is so powerful, unbelievably powerful. And it's so much shown that in its adolescence that a very fresh face to this space, that Freshface's integration information is what's being used on a large scale. And it just kind of blew my mind. And I'm like, okay, well, there needs to be a lot of attention put toward this work, because people were calling us. They were like, oh, you know, I'm experiencing a ton of fragmentation. I don't know who I am anymore. I don't want to be in my relationship anymore. I don't know how to navigate that, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And so I committed to a year in Asia to study, you know, go do the whole enlightenment thing, right? Go study, go meditate under the under a tree in India, and study breath work, meditation, and yoga, and other healing modalities, whatever I could sink my teeth into, really. And I went and I did that, and I learned a lot. I sat with a lot of really, really powerful teachers, and a few really, really amazing, amazing people who channeled a lot of incredible divine energy. And I took that back with me and got booted from Bali in March of 2020. And since then have been incorporating everything that I learned and am currently learning into retreats, utilizing this medicine sometimes and sometimes not utilizing this medicine, focusing on embodiment and how you can take, you know, an experience like Bufal Varius or like 5-MeO-DMT and take that and embody it, so that you not only are experiencing the massively high frequency of this experience and the like the tremors of that, if you will, the feeling of, you know, it relieves anxiety and depression 4 to 6 weeks, et cetera. But how do we take that and we magnify it and we really embody it? And so that from after that experience, you have the tools necessary in order to maintain that frequency as best as we can. You know, it's not easy to have a normal three-dimensional life and maintain that frequency. In fact, it could be said that it's impossible, but we can come close, right? Come close. But at the end of the day, it takes a lot of shifting in your life, redecorating your house, ending some relationships, taking time to yourself that you've maybe never taken before. There's a lot of things that have to be done. And the retreat setting really give somebody the time and the space and the encouragement with the right facilitators and the right team to make those hard decisions and to embody that frequency as best as we can.
Yeah. So this is what you found in your own experience that was kind of missing from the whole scene, that certainly there have been lots of people serving 5-MeO, you know, going back for a long time, but there hasn't been the same emphasis on sometimes even really informing people about what they're getting into before they get into it. And then, you know, there's not necessarily a support system there afterwards. And also having, I think this model of having a retreat is definitely very useful for a lot of people. You know, some people, they're fine. They can get in their car, they drive home and they'll go back about their day.
Yeah.
So it's not like a requirement, but as an option where people can go on retreat, really have their experience and have whatever potential breakdown and reconstruction that can happen afterwards. You know, so many people, I mean, unfortunately, this is just kind of the nature of our existence here in the United States, right? You got to get back to work, you know?
Yeah.
We don't have the opportunity. We don't have the luxury, many of us, to just take as much time as we want. But having that model of the retreat of, okay, you're going to immerse yourself in this, and that you're not going to have any responsibilities afterwards other than towards yourself and towards the community that you're in that time period. I think that that's a powerful tool for a lot of people. And, you know, even if we could speak more broadly about society, it'd be nice if we had even more of that sort of concept to our regular living. I mean, so much of it is just the grind, you know, get back to work, make more money, go to school, do the job, you know.
Get married, have kids.
Yeah. But the idea of actually having time, you know, having space to go through major life changes and to really discover what it is that inspires us, what gives us passion, what energizes us, as you say, at the embodied level. You know, what brings my body to a sense of yes and allowing and being vulnerable and strong and, you know, all of those things. So anyway, I guess I'm just kind of riffing off of what you said there, that I,
yeah,
it's my way of saying I like it.
Cool. And I think it's really important, you know, a lot of the time, medicine, whether it be ayahuasca, Bufal, various, you name it, is given all of the power. It's given all of the glory, right? It's like, this is the key to unlocking me. When the truth is, it's just a tool. And there's many tools. This happens to be a very powerful tool that is very convenient for this huge transition in human consciousness that seems to be taking place. But at the end of the day, it's just a tool. And it's really important to remember that the answer is already there. We all have the light within us. We all have the truth within us. The capital S self is there.
Yeah.
The thing is, we've been subjected to so much conditioning and programming that's based in and misunderstanding and ignorance. And so what it seems to be happening right now is there's a collective cleaning of sorts, where all that programming and conditioning is getting purged, and we're creating this epigenetic shift in what it means to be a human being, right? And I mean, it's so tangible now. You know, 2-3 years ago, whenever I just got started in this space, it was, you couldn't have conversations like this without getting looked at strange. And now today, you can find 1,000 conversations like this on Instagram. It's changed. There's a collective awakening happening, and it's beautiful to see. But at the same time, it's still in its adolescence. It's very squirrely. People are still, you know, oh my gosh, I had this experience. Now I want to share it with as many people as I can. They're going into, you know, serving medicine, for example, without understanding contraindications or having any type of, you know, CPR first aid training, understanding the conservation and how important that is, no understanding of that. And it's causing a lot of harm. And you see this on Facebook groups all over the place, the Bufo narcissists, right? The toad narcissist, the Bufo gangsters. We've seen a lot of it. And it's just so important to remember that this is a tool. And the next stage in this, I believe, Martin, truly is more of a practice of embodiment.
Yeah.
I believe that technology, both outside of our bodies and within our bodies, and understanding that technology, will be able to recreate this immense healing experience that happens whenever you do 5-MeO-DMT. And so right now, it's necessary for the Great Awakening, but over time, it won't be necessary. And I don't believe that I'll be serving this medicine nearly as much, for sure, in the next couple of years. And that's kind of my intention, that we can do it without the medicine in a way. It's more empowering.
Yeah. And I think, you know, emphasizing that it's something that you can embody. And then once you're embodying that, then you're embodying that. Like, people often ask me, like, oh, how often do you take 5-MeO? And I tell them, look, I took 5-MeO for myself back in 2008 and 2009. And then I was done. You know, I'm not sitting around like taking it all the time for myself. Now, I did take it in my sessions with clients while I was working with mm-hmm. them, but I was not taking it for myself, you know? And still today, mm-hmm. people keep asking me, like, well, how often do you do it? And I was like, well, it's been years since I've done it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that mm-hmm. in my own process, I took it, you know, maybe a dozen times. And mm-hmm. then I was embodying that energy. And so then mm-hmm. I was done with that. And I think mm-hmm. that's an important, you know, just also reflecting on what you're saying now, that this is something that is now widespread around the world. A lot mm-hmm. of people want to use it. A lot of people want to have mm-hmm. the experience. And yeah, there will come a point where we don't actually need it. You know, mm-hmm. I do think that it's needed right now. But that's at the individual level, that people need it. And then there's a point where you don't need it anymore. And you need to be honest with yourself about when that is. And then you move on to being yourself. And that also collectively, we need it right now. But there might be a point when we don't need it. And, you know, it's I enjoy talking to you. It's fun because, you know, you're talking about, like, well, this is 3 years ago. And I'm just thinking, well, mm-hmm. just imagine, you know, I started talking about this back in 2008. No one had even heard of what 5-MeO was. I mean, there was no clue. And I'm trying to talk to people about, you know, this unitary state of being and, you know, this profound transformation. They're like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, you're talking about the spirit molecule? They're like, no, I'm not talking about that. You know, so even it's already changed a lot since that time. And even when I stopped serving back in like 2016, even then, people weren't really talking as you're doing now, talking about like integration and embodiment. You know, I was doing that in my own way, talking about those kinds of issues. But it's become more and more part of the conversation. And I think it's a really important part of the conversation. And it's one of the reasons why I love having more newer people on the scene like yourself come onto the podcast to talk about this. Cause like, if we compared this, you know, like, way back in 2008, you know, interviewing James Orrock, and he kind of had a line that he stuck with the whole time, which was, the only person who should serve 5-MeO is a registered nurse. That's all you need, you know? And that was kind of his approach to it, which, you know, on one level, it's like, okay, well, I understand that you're talking about just having someone who's very neutral and has medical expertise, but there's a lot more to it than that. And I think that this is the conversation that is developing now. It's still a work in progress. And it's wonderful that you yourself contributed with your own integration and preparation piece and that got to see that, you know, spread out amongst your connections and, you know, so to make that contribution. And you here now talking about all this is another part of that contribution. So it's beautiful.
Awesome, man. Yeah, it seems that. Thank you. And it's cool. You're saying kind of the ripple of the integration piece and then coming into this space and, you know, coming back from your book, brother, like it's, you know, going back to that giving, I have to give as much reverence as I can to that be and you for being the goat in this space in a way, you know, and I mean, I can't even imagine how you feel seeing what's happening. It's just like, holy shit. I would have never guessed that. I mean, it's just absolutely rampant now. It's incredible, which is a beautiful thing. It's just, it also has its downsides, like everything in life, right? It's all polarity. And I hope that it's my intention and my hope that people who are called to working with this medicine, whether that be experiencing it or facilitating it, it is my intention to be a guiding light, as you were for me, for them, because it's extremely important, but it's extremely, you know, for the collective renaissance, this awakening we're experiencing, but it's extremely important, what's even more important for them to be educated and understand, you know, the logistics and to do their own, the logistics of serving this medicine and to do their own self-work. And to not just jump into the experience, but to have an understanding of what the experience entails, to connect with their practitioner and their facilitator, and to be able to quiz them a bit, you know, to be able to ask them questions that they should absolutely know the answer to. And, you know, something that we do for the retreats and I do for every participant is an intake form, you know, learn what medications that they're on, learn their past experiences with plant medicine, you know, any medical diagnoses like psychosis or bipolar disorder, know their intention. You know, this is something that's really important. And one red flag that you can point out is a practitioner not asking you those questions. You know, if a practitioner doesn't ask you what medications you're on, that practitioner most likely doesn't understand the contraindicative possibilities that can take place. And so the same thing that you've done for the space is my intention to do, and that's just to educate and spread knowledge in a way that's humble, you know, because this is a very interesting space. The entire universe of 5-MeO DMT is very interesting because as someone in the United States, it's almost you have to kind of lay low. You kind of have to have a gentle approach and a gentle presence with this. I feel myself. This could just be me. While at the same time, I really want to just shout from the mountaintops, like, everybody, like, just hit the brakes, you know, like, relax. I know that you want to serve this medicine and give it to all your friends and family. It's not your decision to make.
Yeah.
You know, it's not your decision to make. If it's their time, it will come to them. They will come to it. You know, after serving, you know, hundreds of people this medicine in a short amount of time, there hasn't been one experience, one participant that has come to do the medicine that wasn't just absolutely guided by their intuition, organically landed in this synchronistic, opportunistic moment that is perfectly aligned to do it. There's never been someone like, yeah, I think this is for me. I did mushroom once and yeah, I just want to try it. There hasn't been one experience like that. And if there is that person, I say, you know, buddy, this isn't something that you should assume that you're ready for.
Yeah.
Come back when you know. You know? And so, I want to thank you for the education that you've provided and you know, with platforms like this, instead of constantly being a broken record on Instagram or such, you know, and stuff like that. I'd much rather put music on Instagram and things people enjoy to hear. And with platforms like this one, where people that are actually in the space are listening, to spread that education as much as possible and to provide what we're doing right now and what's working, with my team and my project, what's working, find what's working and share it with others, you know, find what's working and share it with others. And I believe the Conclave has done an amazing job at that. There's a amazing people in the space such as Rock and Mario that are working to, you know, create this education. And, I think it's extremely important for us to do so.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your retreats now. At the time that we were recording this, you have one that's coming up in a couple weeks, which will have already passed by the time this airs. But I know that you do have another one coming up in September there in Sedona. So let's talk about what goes on in the retreat and kind of what's the flow of working with people, starting from, you know, from when somebody hits apply on the website. And I can go ahead and mention your website now, and we'll mention it again. It's connectandevolve.com. When someone hits apply, what process does that start for them in going through this? And also, this is kind of a side question, but I just want to mention it before I forget about it, that you do mention on your website that this is done through the Church of Awakened Truth. So maybe we can also talk about that and how, in terms of legal protections, in terms of what's taking place within the retreats.
Absolutely. So let's go to apply.
First
thing that happens when somebody hits apply is I get a little notification on my phone. And I reach out to them directly. We have a connection call, talk about where they are in their journey. And I absolutely love this. And we were talking about the organic unfolding of it all. And it's always just this beautiful, organic, synchronistic journey that this participant has been on that has landed us on the call. It's really interesting and fascinating every time to me. But we do a connection call, and if the person's feeling called and they're saying, this is for me, I know it for a fact, I'm transitioning in my life, and for some reason I know I have to be there, we sign them up, get them booked in, a little deposit, gets them their spot. And from there, we've been very blessed. The retreats have been selling out usually about 2 months in advance. We have one about every other month to once every 3 months. And from there, we all get together on a group Zoom call. We get to know one another. We get in a signal chat. We start to communicate, to connect, to share our intentions. I have a list of things to help people prepare for the retreat itself. For example, one of them is reading your book amongst many other books, right? Some summer reading. And I tell them usually choose two or three if they can. Listen to one or two and read the other. Reality Revolution by Brian Scott, Becoming Supernatural, Joe Dispenza. You know, these powerful thought leaders. Practices. We have an expansion packet that goes out that has links to different breathwork, yoga, meditation, sound healing practices that they can dive into immediately to start to connect with the practices that we're going to be facilitating at the retreat. So this is all about a month out. Mm-hmm. Once we get to about, and then I do a private connection call with each individual. And then we get to about 2 weeks out. We have another Zoom call. We share what we've been experiencing. We share what we've been reading. We share what we've been practicing, and just get more clear about our intentions, connect with the group even more. So by the time that everybody shows up, we all know each other.
That's nice.
And so it's not just like, hey, you must be Melissa, you know, it's like, Melissa, fucking welcome to heaven on earth, because the space where we do it is quite heavenly. It is amazing. And so we all land at the retreat and we get straight into it. We land right around, we start around 4:30 first day, 4:30 in the afternoon, and we go straight into practice. We go straight into, every retreat's different, but we usually go straight into dancing, connecting, eye gazing, dropping every single shaking bioenergetics, breath work, you know, just any wall that, any tension, any anxiety, any wall that was brought into the space is just completely fucking obliterated. And by the end of that night, everybody's just lounged out, ready to receive, ready for the experience itself. And that night we go into a little bit deeper understanding of what's happening. We go into the science behind gratitude, the science behind forgiveness, the science behind awakening, quantifying awakening, if you will, so that it's more tangible. It's more easy to understand. You know, I've been around so many teachers that are like, it is the great opening of the crown chakra lotus, and then we dive into the great beyond, and that's when you will know. And I'm like, you know, it's really hard for me to
see. Yeah.
Too. And so just dropping in, because now we have it. We have statistic like analysis of all this information. Like, I was very inspired whenever I saw you hitting the 5-MeO DMT with the EEG machine scanning all your brain activity. I was like, that's what I'm about. I'm about the data, man.
Yeah.
We want the data, because whenever you bridge the gap between science and spirituality, that's whenever it's accessible for all, right? You know. Anyway, you have the hippies and the scientists together, and that's what you want. Anyway, we go a little bit deeper into the practices that we're going to be doing and why they're so beneficial. And we go into, if it's a medicine retreat, we'll go into the medicine, and talk about the flow of the week. And then the next day we have a full day, dynamic breath work, which is a breath work I designed, based on Wim Hof's breath work. We go straight into dynamic breath work, and this is the breath work that everybody that comes through Connect and Evolve retreats just absolutely loves and practices all the time. And it's similar to Wim Hof, and then we do cold plunges that morning in Oak Creek. We do yoga. We do Qigong. We get into some heart-opening workshops. A lot of the times I'll fly lamas and different spiritual teachers in from all over the world, and we'll have a workshop with that teacher. And they are just incredible. The frequency of love that they hold, the quantum healing that takes place is unreal. And then we usually go into quantum forgiveness, and where we get really clear about everything that needs to be forgiven in our lives with our family members and ourselves. We get super clear on that. And there is a tangible shift whenever this forgiveness happens, right? There's something that occurs whenever we truly forgive something or someone that really moves us into a space of where we can then receive, creates so much space.
Yeah.
And then from there toward the end of the day, you know, we have a little bit of free time. There's a beautiful Oak Creek, the most amazing river I know of, that runs through Sedona. Free time, float time on Oak Creek. They have amazing, there's finch, there's heron, there's smallmouth bass, there's carp. There's so much wildlife that you can experience, hummingbirds, butterflies floating down that river. And it's just, if all it was floating the river at the retreat, it would be enough. Let me just say that. For me at least, you know, taking that free time, and then from there moving into sonic neural breath work, which is the breath work that I designed, again, inspired by other breath work facilitators. This is more of a holotropic transformational style of breath work, where we start to really connect with the experience of surrender. We start to really connect with the experience of cathartic release, right? We start to really prepare for the medicine if it's a medicine retreat. Mm-hmm. Because they're not all medicine retreats, right? Sometimes that breath work is the medicine, is the epitomic experience that the participant has that is then needing to be integrated. And from there, the next day, typically, if it's a medicine retreat, we'll do medicine all day long. Each participant goes one at a time. We incorporate body work. We incorporate neuro-linguistic programming, Reiki, and an integration specialist on hand. And so the participant, by the time that they do the medicine, is so relaxed and so receptive and so surrendered that it is an effortless and beautiful slip into non-duality and the divine. And as soon as they come back, their feet touch the sand and the earth right by that river. There's an integration specialist right there to help see them through in any way they need. And it makes the experience so much more amazing, if you will. It just makes it easier. And from there, we have integration. And the integration entails taking time to connect with the body, what we talked about earlier, the embodiment. And this is hiking in the beautiful red mountains of Sedona or Mexico, because we'll have medicine retreats in Mexico. Taking time to play volleyball, you know, play ping pong, to dance, to move, to sing, to do things with the body, to connect with the water, to submerge up to here in the Oak Creek. It's so connecting. And so we're really taking the frequency and we're anchoring in the body. And the next day is departure. And so while everybody leaves after a short integration, the integration continues, excuse me, through the connection of the group and through the integration document. And any support that any participant needs after the retreat, they are catered to in every way by either myself or a member of the team. And throughout the retreat, obviously, we have epic, amazing, delicious food from some really badass chefs, some really amazing chefs. Everything's gluten-free, dairy-free, vegetarian options. And yeah, just experiencing the amazing vibe and energy of Sedona or Tepoztlan in Mexico. And that's a retreat, man.
Nice. Certainly sounds like there's a lot of diversity there. Mm-hmm. I just had a couple questions just came up for me. One was, there's all these different elements. Do you ever find yourself paring certain things away? Has this been like an ongoing accumulation of like, oh yeah, well let's add some of this and let's have some of this and let's have some of this. But have other things, like, have you tried and found, oh, that didn't work so well, so we're not going to do that? Or do you change it up in different retreats? I'm just kind of curious in terms of like that planning and organization, has that gone?
Yes. So there's kind of a foundational structure that we've created for the retreats, and it's based on, will there be medicine? Will there not be medicine? Yeah. The energy of the group, right? What medicine will be there? Because there also could be Wachuma and psilocybin. It just depends. And it's really based on the energy of the group that's coming. But there have been some things that we've stripped away, new things that have been introduced, and it's constantly evolving, you know, like, even 6 months ago, I didn't have a team. And so I was doing this with other people and bringing my gifts and what I share to their retreats. And next thing I know, the universe is like, kicked me out of the nest, told me to fly. And I was scared shitless. I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I'm ready. And then a team assembled around me, and which has just been such a blessing. And so, you know, it's constantly growing. It's constantly evolving. If I feel like there's something that should change and there's something new that comes to mind, always implement it, always bring it into the space. And for every group, it's different. The energy, the experiences, everything is different, and it's always harmonious. It always ends in a beautiful harmony. And I really believe that it's the intention and the energy of the people who are facilitating and the energy of the space. I think that contributes everything to holding the frequency for that group to experience the expansion and the healing that they came for.
Nice.
Yeah.
So let me ask you about the clientele themselves. Just kind of curious, like, who shows up for these retreats? Is it, do you have a typical clientele, or is it more broad than we might expect?
It's pretty broad. You know, it's really been interesting noticing, like, in my private work, most of the clientele has been like CEOs, high performers, Ivy League graduates. You know, these are the people that are really seeking this work, and they usually want to do a private retreat, multiple day. And then, you know, you also have the experience where the dude from the hippie commune, you know what I mean, who is able to connect with you on such a deep level, but doesn't have a dollar in his pocket. And you work with them too, and you receive a lot of times much more by what they understand and where they've been and the stories that they can share with you and the connection they can create. So it's a very diverse clientele, but for the retreats, they're affordable. They're right around $2,000. And in, you know, for Sedona, that's pretty unbelievable. It's very expensive out here, but I decide to keep it at that price because it's accessible to almost everyone, right?
Yeah.
Almost everybody, you know, you could take your stimulus money and come to a retreat, right? If you wanted to. So a lot of the times we'll have people that are successful, that have experienced success in their life to some degree, right? People that have been successful in their job, made plenty of money, but are looking for something more. And I understand what they mean. You know, it's part of my story is experiencing exactly that. Yeah. I've been there. And a lot of the times people are in transition. They're like, you know, I'm deciding if I want to quit my job or not.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, they quit their job. You know, it's almost like they're coming to receive permission from the universe to do what they know in their intuition, their true self, what to do.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Well, I think it's such a great comment because it really shows how many of us are really just disconnected from our heart and disconnected from our center, that we do look for some kind of affirmation from outside, you know, whether that's going to retreat or reading the stars or whatever it is. But when, you know, when, if you really pay attention to what's in your heart, you'll know if you really want to stay in that job or not. Now, of course, sometimes we do need a catalyst. I mean, I don't want to discount that
in
any sense. And that certainly, you know, doing breath work or working with the medicines, you know, it opens up new horizons for people. So they're able to perceive new possibilities in a way that they weren't able to before. So it has a role. But I do think it is interesting that even the fact that, it's kind of like we were talking about earlier, that our society really does need more retreats. And I think it has to do with sort of our disconnection from just the rhythm of a truly lived life versus life that is just pushed according to the clock and deadlines and schedules and, you know, the structures of society that don't really mesh with, you know, I don't want to sound too much like a hippie, but don't really mesh with like actual lived human earth time. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, that we do need moments of reflection. We do need time off. We do need a break. Yeah. We do need to seek refuge in something, at least for a time.
Absolutely.
So that we, because there's so much noise in our day-to-day existence that people aren't able to listen to their hearts because it's suffocated by all the rest of the noise of what's taking place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important to remove ourselves from anybody's perceived pedestal that may be there. And by that, I mean, a lot of people will, you know, a lot of people could listen to this podcast, say, wow, I can't imagine what that Martin and Ben are able to experience peace and joy and bliss in life. And they've just made it. And, you know, I think that it's very important for us to make it very clear that that's not the case, right?
Yeah.
While it's easier by doing this work to navigate the third dimension, it's never effortless by any means. And as your higher self is more developed and grows more, the hilarious conundrum of this educational space called Earth is that the ego also becomes smarter and wittier and more cunning,
yeah.
Right? And I tell this to people all the time, we're coming out of the age of the guru, right? There's no more guru. You are the guru. Every single individual is the guru, is the healer. And now instead of gurus, we have guides. And guides also experience suffering, also experience struggle, also yeah. experience hardship. A lot of the times, just as much of the individuals that are coming to the guides for a peep into right healing. And, you know, for myself, unlike you, I had a bunch of overdoses whenever I was in this apprenticeship, right? I had, you know, this traumatic experience with the medicine personally, doses that were too big. I never got to experience the experience that I provide others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because I've always thought, you know, like dozens and dozens and dozens of times, I'm like, man, I would really love to have this experience myself. You know, I'm just dishing it out. And this Saturday will be the first time that I've had a full experience, full protocol, full release in since my apprenticeship, done in a proper, loving, and intentional way ever in my life, in receiving from someone else. And I'm so excited and I'm so grateful. And it ties back into making it very clear that even your perceived healers are very much so in need of their own personal healing. And everyone carries some type of baggage. We all carry some type of karma. Nobody is perfect. And I feel like that's a misconception that a lot of people experience. And so I like to make that really clear.
Yeah. There's a few points there I'd like to highlight. And
for sure.
One is that in your own quest for fulfillment, there was the element of giving towards others.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. The flip side of that is also the ability and willingness to receive. And it also goes back to what you're saying about forgiveness, that by forgiving others, we actually make space in our own hearts then to receive our own sense of forgiveness, that so many of us are burdened by feelings of lack of worth of receiving love. And so mm-hmm. then we project that outwards as well. So this is the reciprocity. This is the exchange of energy that's really what we're getting to. And then going back to the idea again of if you're going to embody it, that the energy is reciprocal. You give and you receive. And also, I just want to highlight, you know, like back when I went through my whole awakening process and all of that, you know, the first book that I wrote after that, I made the title Being Human, because I really wanted to emphasize mm-hmm. that what I'm talking about is not some rarefied state of perfection all the time, where everything is just always great. But actually, this is about being human, that as a human being, we are the universal consciousness embodied as the individuals mm. that we are. So we're ultimately both of these things simultaneously. And mm-hmm. that living from your heart and living from an authentic embodied place, that brings a level of satisfaction and a level of sense of worth and value to your existence. But it doesn't solve all your problems, right? Because you still go mm-hmm. on being a human being. And as you say, even as we disassemble the ego, that the ego then learns, oh, okay, it adapts really quickly, right? I mean, it's this beautiful, beautiful beast that can immediately reconfigure and like, oh, well, I'll just usurp that and I'll take that as well. So that it's an ongoing process of always returning to our authenticity. And acknowledging, you know, both for ourselves and for others that, look, none of us are perfect. Life is hard. There's always going to be suffering. If you think that taking 5-MeO is going to solve all your problems, you've just created more problems for yourself, ultimately.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's the ongoing work of being, not just reaching some endpoint where then, oh, okay, everything's perfect now. But that ongoing dance, that ongoing exchange of energy, because that's what life is the exchange of energy. We take energy in, we put energy out, we embody it, we be it. And to see yourself and others working in this capacity as guides to really provide a safe and nurturing place for people to go through the process, which is very, very important, the process itself, because the process is where you get results from. It's not about singular events. It's about the process that you go through. And it's so important to have nurturing, supportive guides who have also done their own work and who know who they are and know what they have to offer. And that's what I'm hearing coming from you. So it's very nice to hear, you know, that this sounds like good work. Yeah.
Thank you, brother. It's pretty amazing to me that it's come full circle to this podcast. so cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, even since you mentioned that, you know, I'll just say that actually some person on your team had sent me an email like months ago now.
Janine.
Yeah, and I didn't know who you were. And, you know, I get various requests from people to be on the podcast. And my response to her was, well, you know, I get to people in the order of the requests that I receive it. So, you know, I'll get to Ben at some point. And so then just the other week, I was, you know, going through my emails and I was like, oh, yeah, there's this guy, Ben Holt. And so at that point, I'll tell you, Ben, I had not even looked at your website. All I had was that email from Janine saying, well, here's Ben Holt. And it's like, okay, so I'm ready for Ben now. And so then after I sent you the message saying, I'd like to have you on the podcast, after that, and I got your response saying, oh, great. I went and I looked at your website. And I was like, see, I didn't even know that you were into Toad. I didn't even know that when I agreed to have you on. Right. And then I'm digging through your website. I was like, damn, I think this is going to be a lot of fun. You know, this is someone's going to be interesting to talk to. And then, yeah, and you'd also mentioned in your email, it's like, oh, yeah, Joel. I was like, oh, he knows Joel. It's like, so anyway, you know, it's kind of like you're saying, you know, when people show up for the medicine, that there's often a nice synchronicity there, that I kind of feel that's how this interview came about. Cause, yeah, until I really dug into you a little bit, you know, you were just a name that somebody had sent me to have on the podcast. So, you know, but you know, here we are.
Here we are. So cool, man. Such a blessing and an honor to be featured on this platform with you. And I just got to come back to the gratitude for your work and the energy and intention that you've put into your books to guide so many to the promised land, you know, the space beyond suffering, if you will, where there is still suffering, but it's much more manageable.
Say. So tell me about the Church of Awakened Truth. So
the Church of Awakened Truth is, it's called the Church of Awakened Truth. It's a simple religious organization, right? It's a 501c3 for whatever, however my lawyer calls it. But through the Church of Awakened Truth, you know, I'll just say this, there are ways to create sovereignty in the United States of America. There are ways to create legal protection, if you will, in the United States of America. And while in Mexico and Canada, you have many more freedoms, especially with entheogens, and then you do in Oregon, of course, and you do in Oakland and DC and all these different places. It's almost like the United States of America says, yeah, you can have this, but you got to pay the toll, man. You know, you've got to, you got to jump through our hoops. You got to pay the money. You got to pay your rent, and it's okay. And so, you know, one way to practice, these practices with medicines is, legally in the United States of America is through religious organizations and multiple layers of sovereignty that are created through religious organizations and trusts. And it's a complicated issue that I do not know a lot about. My lawyer does, and my colleagues do. And so they've been really generous with sharing it with me and how to do this in a way that is protected. But beyond that, and I don't want to sound too woo-woo, but I'm a firm believer that people that are intentionally creating space for healing for others are protected by spirit and by tribe, and that there is no bully around the corner that is strong enough to penetrate that layer of protection at the end of the day. At the end of the day, there's nothing on this earth that can take away the virtue that you earn while you're here, that can take away the good karma, if you will. And that's me looking at it from a place of the macro, you know, instead of looking at the micro and allowing fear to infiltrate this work, because it's easy to do. It's easy for fear to say, hey, man, well, watch out, bro. You got all these people that want to kick your ass and want to take you down. It's an easy thing to do. And I kind of made a choice. I remember my mentor looked me in the eye one day and said, if you're in this space, you can't have fear. You can't have fear. So come back when you're fearless. Mm. And I remember that, and it struck a chord with me. And I kind of made a choice to say, I can't have fear. There can be no fear. There can only be integrity, authenticity, and intention for good. And if that's there, then that's all the protection you really need, I believe. But at the end of the day, pay the toll, man. Jump through the hoops. Do the religious organizations. Do everything you need to do. Don't ask me about it because I don't know a whole lot. But we have officially gone through the taking the measures to do what we do in a way that's legal in the United States. But with that being said, the Church of Awakened Truth is more of an intentional organization. It's not something that right now is being used as, you know, like, I'm not gathering members right now.
Yeah.
Martin, if you'd love to become a member of the Church of Awakened Truth, you just let me know. It'll be great. I bestow upon you, you are a member of the Church of Awakened Truth.
Awesome.
It's more of okay, this is what I need to do for legal protection. Cool deal. What's the intention behind it? You know, and I really believe that it's truth, and truth is experiential. And this is interesting because the Bwiti and Gabon, they say, you know, in the West you have faith. But here we have Iboga.
Yeah.
So we don't need faith because we know the truth. Because it's experiential. And I'll never forget the first moment that I had experiential truth. And that moment in Austin, Texas, that's really whenever it really cemented for me. I felt truth in a way that was so profound. It was unbelievable. And there was no doubt. There was no room for doubt because the fullness of this truth is just exceptional. And so that's why I named the religious organization the Church of Awakened Truth, because ultimately that's what we're doing. We're coming back, we're being awakened to our true nature. And with this great awakening that's happening, I just can't begin to fathom the beautiful future that we are going to inhabit and that our children and children's children are going to inhabit. And while right now it may seem very, very dissonant and very dystopian, I'm a firm believer and very optimistic about that there is going to be a large shift in consciousness. It's already happened, but an even larger, unbelievable shift in consciousness. And you have the choice, the sovereign choice, if you will be a part of the shift that's toward the light or toward the darkness. And I believe that everybody listening to this podcast most likely has made that choice to shift toward the light. And I don't know what else to say after that.
Nice. Well, I just to highlight again, I'm enjoying highlighting aspects of your talk here, but just that idea of sort of freedom from fear. And especially when you're working in medicine spaces and serving medicine, just how important that is. And that we do live in this kind of bizarre, paradoxical reality, you know, where we're in the United States and land of the free and all this, but you know, we're not really, because the man can come down on you for using these tools, for using these medicines, mm-hmm. and that by creating a church, by creating a religious organization, that even though, you know, we're not talking about a physical place, we're not talking about a gathering of worshipers, we're not talking about, mm-hmm. you know, a priestly hierarchy or anything about that, but this is an area of law in the United States where we do grant certain exceptions to certain mm-hmm. laws in order to preserve what we see as religious freedom. And, mm-hmm. You know, I've known other people who have done this as well, have created their 501c3 dash, whatever the letters yeah. and numbers are. And
pie.
And that does seem to provide for some people that sense of, I can be more open about it, or mm-hmm. I can talk about it, you know, that mm-hmm. so much of what has happened, you know, in the underground, I think is part of the problem, you know, that everything's underground, that people are secretive and that they're afraid, like, oh man, somebody's going to come get us, or, you know, they're going to take away mm-hmm. our freedoms because we're doing these things. And so, you know, mm-hmm. if that's what it takes, you know, to register as a church, if that helps people get that sense of, you know what I'm doing is legit. Ultimately, what it comes down to, as I know you know, is that you've got to feel mm-hmm. it in your own heart, that you're safe, yeah. that what you're doing is right, that what you're doing is of service. That's the most important thing. But we do live in a society with rules and laws and police and regulations. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, just having that extra layer of protection, you know, is worthwhile. And
yeah,
obviously
absolutely.
The landscape is changing. I mean, right now, California is poised to decriminalize all drugs, so that and yeah. psychedelics, so they're right on the edge. We've already done that here mm-hmm. in Oregon. They're legalizing psilocybin therapy, but see, even there, that's not necessarily a universal religious or spiritual recognition. Mm-hmm. You know, here in Ashland, where I live, we have the Santo Daime Church, and they've gone to court. They've got the legal right to drink ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are just different tools that we have that are available to provide that sense of legitimacy, that sense mm-hmm. of rightness, so that we can mm-hmm. live outside of fear and not always worry yes. about, are they going to come get me? And, you know, one of the ways that I do that is that, you know, I know a lot of people in the medicine community, they all want to use Signal and they want to use proton mail and they want everything to be encrypted. Mm-hmm. And kind of my mm-hmm. philosophy all the way along is, no, I'm just going to use Gmail. I'm just going to use Skype. Like, I don't really care about that because
yeah.
I know that there is nothing that I'm doing that's wrong in any way, shape, or
right.
form. And if somebody wants to come and try and put me in jail for the information that I share,
mm-hmm.
let them do it. Because,
yeah.
you know, I'm not going to go down quietly.
Yeah.
you know, which is right. not to say I want them to come get me or anything like that.
Right.
But
there's going to be a big petition.
yeah. But just having that sense of, no, there's nothing wrong with this. There's yeah. nothing to hide.
You're so supportive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that having that, you know, can lift you up and
absolutely
give you the courage so that you can do the work that needs to be done. And so, you know, that's what we need is freedom from fear.
Mm-hmm. Freedom from fear. Absolutely. That's what it really comes down to. And where your attention goes, energy flows. And, you know, it doesn't take many Joe Dispenza books or Brian Scott's work to realize and understand that at every moment of every day, we are cultivating and curating our reality. While there's many factors at play there, it's a very, very true. It's something that's very true, and it's something that you can experience in a really powerful way whenever you quantum manifestation, for example. If you really sink into a visualization of what you're choosing to bring into your reality, and you feel it with all of your heart, and you apply that directly to the experience in the moment, and then you surrender it through this process. It's freaking unreal what you can create. And with that, with bringing something into your reality, you can do the same exact thing with keeping something out of your reality. And this is with psychic self-defense. That's really applicable practice whenever you're doing that. You know, you're not only keeping material and people and energy out of your space, but you can keep spirits and entities and et cetera, out of your space. And so there's a really powerful way to go about this intentionally. And if you're constantly in fear of something happening, you're constantly bringing it toward you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there can't be fear. And my mentor is right. So you can't have fear. And it's like, well, okay. And if you're going to do something on a larger scale, you know, if you will, and have a voice, then you have to go through, you have to cross your T's and dot your I's. But like you said, at the end of the day, you're not doing anything wrong. And you know who knows that? God knows that. You know, and whatever you want to call God, God can be the quantum field and the reflection of everything that you do and express. That energy knows what you're doing and knows what you're up to. And it's going to give you everything that you deserve, right? It's going to reflect everything right back to you. And that can either come in the form of abundance and joy and relationships and great experiences, or it can come in the form of sickness and dis-ease. And it's all there to get your attention and to direct you in the right direction. So yeah, totally agree. We need less fear in the world. And this is a beautiful medicine for creating that, I feel.
Yeah.
What I've seen.
So it sounds to me that, you know, this whole process of the retreats and the work and developing your own systems of breath work, that there's been a lot of creativity in that for you. But I did want to ask you specifically about your creativity, because you had mentioned earlier in our talk being in Colombia with a camera and a drone and wanting to do some filming and take shots and things like that. Do you still participate in those kinds of creative endeavors at this point? And I also notice on your webpage, you know, you've got like some guided meditations with some music, and you know, there's some nice photography on here. Is this what you're doing? Are you exploring your creativity through these other avenues as well?
So I'm a professional musician. So, and I've been a musician for a long time, and I forgot to mention that about the retreats we do. Something I've been curating for years is sound bath experience and sound healing. Something I've accumulated a lot of knowledge on, and when it comes to like cellular rejuvenation and relaxation through sound and through frequency, this is something that we apply at the retreats and something I'm very passionate about. When it's not sound healing, very intentional sound healing, I'm playing music. At your, you know, at a local patio restaurant, if you will, or sometimes if I'm lucky, I get to play at a festival, and I'm fully stepping into this space of musical expression. I feel like I just got permission. I grew up a musician, but I feel like I just got permission from the universe after doing all this work, becoming a facilitator and a guide and retreat host. It was finally like, all right, bro, you're there. Now you get to be a musician. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And so a lot of intention and energy and attention is going into my music these days. And I'm super excited to bring that to the world in the form of, you know, I got rid of all my stuff that was previously on Spotify and SoundCloud, and I'm hoping to release an album by the end of the year. But when it comes to video, I absolutely love being behind the frame, man. Is there something really special about the law of thirds, right? We're a three-dimensional creatures, and the Fibonacci sequence and the golden ratio, to see it and to capture it with a camera is something that we were never able to do until very recently, you know. And to be able to utilize that technology to create is, oh my God, it's been so epic and beautiful and amazing. And whenever I was in Asia, I actually made a documentary called Spirit of the Earth, Sadhus of India. Made it by myself, was my dark night of the soul, had, you know, fell off the back of a motorcycle with the camera in my hand, all my equipment broke, almost went to prison twice. It was just so gnarly creating that film. And I wanted to know, like, what's it like to be a filmmaker? You know, like, give me the hardship. And fuck, man, I went through the ringer making that little 30-minute documentary. And I just have so much respect for the people that are indie filmmakers now. And but yeah, I absolutely love to express myself through film and through photos. But man, you only got 24 hours in the day. You know, at the end of the day, it's like, where are you going to put your energy? It has to be directed toward what you're doing right now in this moment. And if somebody offered me $10,000 to make a film for them, I would totally be putting my energy there, right? It's but you know, because you got to pay the bills as well.
Yeah.
But yes, my creative life, I'm giving much more intention and energy to lately, Martin. Yeah.
Nice. So, what instruments do you play?
So I'm a multi-instrumentalist. I play quite a few instruments, like multiple different kinds of drums, different types of hangpans, didgeridoo, multiple types of flutes. I grew up playing piano, play guitar, bass, jaws harp, rattles, a whole lot of stuff. Play quite a few things.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I always like to share that, like, the best instrument, the best single instrument that I ever purchased for myself is the Korg Wave Drum Global Edition. And it's an electronic hand drum, but it's got like 200 different sets of like percussion from around the world. And I love that instrument so much. Like, cause anybody who can play a hand drum, you can play this thing, and it's just got so many sounds, and it's the best for like just live looping solo performances, man. You hook that thing up to the loop pedal, and then you just got all these drums, and you put some guitar in there, and you just put some flute over the top, and man, it's so much fun. I love it.
Dude, I think literally I bought a workstation not long ago, and I've been using the drum samples in the workstation, but I was looking at the HP Sonic from Roland and then the Korg Wave Drum. And I was like, oh gosh, I got to get one of these drums. They're like $1,000. They are not cheap. And I was like, no, I won't do it. But I think you just convinced me, Martin. I think I might have to get the universal hand drum.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome. I mean, I've done a couple albums now where all of the percussion on the albums is just the Korg Wave Drum. And,
that's awesome.
You know, especially for anybody who plays live, I mean, it's so much easier just bringing the wave drum than like, well, I've got my djembe, I've got my dumbek, I've got my bongos, you know?
Yeah, you the tablas.
Yeah, you got to bring all this crap with you. But here you just bring one drum and it's got 200 different sets of, I mean, it's not just on the individual settings, it's not just one sound. It's like where you hit the drum on the side or in the middle, it has different instruments. And so there'll be like bells and also the bass and the treble. And I mean, it's awesome. It's really great. So
it's
that's
so sick.
Yeah. In terms of like a single purchase for an instrument, it's just the best thing ever. Yeah. So absolutely. I recommend it, you know, so Korg, I'm waiting for my, you know, what?
Yeah. Your commission.
Yeah. Where's my commission?
Go korg.com/hangdrum/Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's, for me, that's the workstation, that little keyboard that has, you know, 1200 sounds built into it. It's just, you have so much diversity and so much access, and it's, God, it's amazing what technology has done for music. And I'm even using loop pedals and vocal pedals and harmony and reverb pedals and my sound baths now.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, playing a flute in a room is cool, but playing a flute in a room through a reverb that sounds like you're in a hockey stadium is way cooler.
Yeah, and then you got the harmonizer on there too, and you get, yeah, and it sounds like, oh, it's great. Yeah, I love the integration of technology with music. I mean, there was a time in my life where I was like, everything's got to be acoustic, And I left that a long time ago. It's like, I love working with the technology and the pedals and the effects and the things that you can do, especially, you know, as a solo musician, giving you the opportunity to really be a one man band and do that. I love it. Mm-hmm. And that's also why I'm grateful for the internet and, you know, modern communications technology, that, you know, any of us can put our music out there and have people enjoy it, and, you know, or even write books. You can get them distributed online. You know, that it's really is a new era where it allows people to really empower themselves and, you know, produce their own work and share it with the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm super, can I find these albums on SoundCloud or Spotify, or where should I look? 'Cause I got to hear this percussion, man.
Yeah. My SoundCloud page is a bit more limited, but certainly on Spotify or, Apple Music. You'd probably really dig my album called Rhythmic Passages. And that's one of the ones where everything is the Korg wave drum. And then I got some flutes on top and some didgeridoo and a couple other things. But other than that, it's all the Korg wave drum. But it's called Rhythmic Passages. So you can find that on Spotify. I think you'd get a kick out of it.
Awesome, man. I'm going to have to come out to Ashland, or you'll have to come out to Sedona, and we'll have to get a good jam in sometime.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never been to Sedona. I've been north of there in Flagstaff, and I've been south of there because for my PhD, I did my field work in New Mexico at the Mescalero Apache Reservation. So I was driving back and forth between California and New Mexico. But, you know, so I was only just driving through Arizona. I never really spent any time in Arizona, and I've never made it to Sedona. But I'd love to get out there with my camera.
Oh, dude. Yeah. This place, I've been to a lot of places in the world, and I'm not sure that there's anywhere more beautiful than Sedona, Arizona.
Yeah.
It is unfreaking real. With these red rocks, the energy that they hold, the frequency of this place, even with, you know, everybody and their mama trying to move here from California, and, you know, the prices skyrocketing, you know, it's $1,500 for a studio here right now. It is so fucking beautiful, and it's breathtaking every single day. So I highly recommend coming out here, man.
Right on. And that's where your retreats are happening too. Yeah.
Yes. And so if you come out, I'll bring you to the retreat center, give you the grand tour, go for a swim in Oak Creek, jam out, play some music in the Geodome. It'll be a good time.
All right. Well, that sounds like a good place to wrap it up for today, Ben, but it's really been a great pleasure speaking with you. I've enjoyed it very much. Just want to remind the audience that your website is connectandevolve.com, where you can find out more about Ben and his offerings and his retreats and all kinds of stuff to sample on there. So go check it out. But Ben, has been great speaking with you today. I really enjoyed it.
Likewise, Martin. Thank you so much, brother. And thank you for your contribution to the world and to me and to the fellow seekers. And we are all very grateful for you, my friend.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you for saying so.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, bro. All right. Talk to you soon.